This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. For longtime fans and friends of public broadcasting, Rick Steves needs very little introduction. On NPR stations, he's host of Travel with Rick Steves. On PBS, there's Rick Steves Europe. He also runs a large touring company that, when there's not a global pandemic anyway, guides thousands of people through Europe every year. And of course, he's the author of many guidebooks, starting with Europe Through the Back Door in 1980, up through 2020's For the Love of Europe, My Favorite Places, People, and Stories. I talk with Steves for a member event for Illinois Public Media, our program's home station, which this year is celebrating its 100th anniversary. This was a virtual event, and Steve shared photos from his recent travels in Europe. You'll hear him make reference to the images a few times, and while we can't share them over the radio, we have posted a few on our website, 21stshow.org. You can check them out right now. Because this is on tape, we're also not taking calls, but as you'll hear, we did have a lot of questions from the member listeners who attended our event. And on that note, to everyone out there who supports your local public radio or public television station, thank you. Okay, here now is my conversation with Rick Steves. Rick, I'm going to begin with a topic that I think has been top of mind for most of us for far too long, whether we want it there or not, and that's COVID-19. Most of us have been hunkering down for the better part of 2 years. You've spent some time out in the world, though, so what has it been like traveling in a pandemic?
Yeah, well, thank you, Brian. It's great to be with you. And as far as COVID goes, yeah, this has been a miserable time for anybody with a business in tourism like me. I've got 100 people on my payroll, and we've had basically no revenue for 2 years. We had our best year ever in 2019. The big question going into 2020 was, how is Europe going to handle all the crowds? You know, it's just the crowds are becoming a problem. Well, then all of a sudden COVID hit and they just said the opposite problem. There's no tourism. I didn't do any. We had canceled all of our tours, give back 24,000 deposits for people that were on our tours for 2020. And of course, nothing in 2021. Just a couple of months ago, I went to Europe because I wanted to know what it was like. And my girlfriend and I headed off to Europe early September. And I was hiking around Mont Blanc and going to Paris. And then later I went with my tour and business to Italy and Greece. And I'll share you some of the lessons I've learned from traveling during COVID. People are wearing their masks and taking them off when they sit down at a restaurant, just like here. And it's a time when we go to Europe that you hope to find that action on the streets. Everybody's out there having a beautiful, convivial time, just like you hope during the pandemic. And we would just sit down and chat with the people next to us in our rattan chairs and having our beautiful glass of white wine. And it was just like the good old days. The point is, you can travel during COVID if you want to. This was the halls of the Vatican Museum. And one thing different here is you can actually see the museum. If you've been there in the last 10 years, it's just a mosh pit of tourists. But this is like remarkably empty because during COVID, they're only letting so many people into the various sites at a time. When you get into a museum in Europe, you wear a mask. So I was wearing my mask much more in Europe than I was in the United States because I was in a lot of public places where it's just considered common courtesy to wear a mask. And it's quite strictly enforced. And you don't get a sense in Europe that anybody has, I mean, they have the anti-vaxxer demonstrations and so on, but there's not an angriness about wearing a mask and this kind of thing and social distancing. I think Europe is more social-istic. They're just used to being close to people and respecting their neighbor and, you know, being mindful of what are people's comfort zones and so on. Technically, Brian, you can go to Europe without your vaccinations, but your world is very small. It's very difficult. And I would just say, for all intents and purposes, you need your vaccination to go to Europe and you need your CDC card that's right up to date. Basically, I would say that if you are comfortable traveling in the United States during COVID, it should not be any different in Europe. I felt safer in Europe than I feel traveling around the United States. You just don't want to go to places where you think there's people that have a bad attitude about masks and vaccinations.
So Karen had asked, I think you answered that question. When do you think we can feel safe traveling internationally? It sounds like pretty much now for you, for vaxxed and boosted. Yeah. And how good do you think, she also wanted to know what you think about airplane travel. She asked specifically about the air filters on airplanes, but it strikes me that potentially the most dangerous point of any trip like this is airport security lines or being on the plane itself, perhaps.
You know, I'm no scientist on this, but I mean, if flight attendants are flying every day and if they're saying it's okay, I feel fine on an airplane. Where I don't feel fine is going to a bar where there's a lot of people that probably aren't vaccinated and there's just no social distancing. It's strict on airplanes. And so I think To me, the airplane ride is not a big deal. What's the big deal is the standards of the people around you, where you're going. You want to go to a biker rally in North Dakota? Well, that's going to be a little different than going to the Orsay Gallery in Paris. So you need to decide, how do you want to be exposed? I'm not saying it's safe. I wouldn't take a group over there right now. I think it's going to get better. I think Omicron's going to peak and things are going to be on a glide path to relative normalcy. But I would be comfortable going alone. I've been two times. Half of my staff, I've got 100 people on my staff, half of them been to Europe and had a great time. As an individual, I would go. But if you're not, if you've got a fragile system from an immunity point of view and so on, or if you have any, if you want to be really, really careful, you probably want to wait a little while.
We had another question on this point from Kelly in Urbana, who asks, which European destinations would you recommend for travelers who want to avoid large crowds?
Don't even think about that, because your trip is 3 weeks away, 3 months away. And, you know, you might think that, oh, Portugal's doing really good and Sweden's doing really good. So you decide to go there. And then 2 months later, they're doing terrible. And Ireland and Belgium are really good. So Europe is, it's just a moving target. And I wouldn't say one country is better than the other, because as soon as you get that locked in, it changes. That's the difficult thing about this pandemic. You just can't predict what it's going to be like in 2 months. That's the frustrating thing for me as a tour organizer. And that's the frustrating thing for somebody who's planning their trips. I would say if you want to be careful, minimize the countries you go to. Just go to one country. If you just went, you know, just to France or just to Italy or just to Germany, that would make more sense than doing a, you know, if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium kind of tour. Because right now there's quarantines required in the Netherlands, and there's nothing like that in Italy. And, you know, but next month it could be different. But I just today I sent to my travel agent my flight wishes, and I'll be flying to Europe, God willing, on March 18. And I expect to have a good time.
Well, on your previous trip you were mentioning, I know you went for a 60-mile hike around Mont Blanc.
Yes.
You are not somebody who I think is you know, necessarily seen as a mountaineer, although you do have, you know, outdoor activities. But you wrote about this and mentioned some large birds of prey circling overhead. I take it, you know, by your presence here that their hopes were dashed. But how do you prepare for that kind of trip?
On our first day, let me just show you some slides here, because I really had a great time. And on our first day in this is my friend Shelley and David Preston from Twin Cities Public Television and his partner Sue. And the four of us, none of us, as you gently reminded everybody, were really mountaineers. We were rookies at this. We were gearheads or whatever you call it. You know, we just had all this new stuff that we didn't know how to use. And we were just a comedy of errors on our first day. And I did notice carnivorous birds circling overhead as if waiting for one of us to drop. But we had a great time. And I'll just take a few minutes here to take you through our trip. This is one great thing, Brian, about my love of travel in Europe. I've been spending 100 days a year in Europe ever since I was a kid. That's a long time ago. 100 days every year exploring, finding new stuff. And there's still great frontiers of tourism that I've never tried. And one of them is the venerable long distance walks. And I decided to start with the greatest. And that's Mont Blanc, the Tour de Mont Blanc. Mont Blanc is the tallest mountain in Europe, higher than Mount Rainier, 15,000 feet. And you start in near Chamonix, and everybody hikes counterclockwise. That's a 100-mile trail. You do it in 10 days. You're not going to summits. You're going over mountain passes from valley to valley. And what I did was we cheated. We cherry-picked the best 6 days and 60 miles. And we took public buses through the boring 40 miles. And we just did the very best miles. And we took a tour, cost $1,800 or something for the tour. And it lined up our hotels, our beautiful dinners, and our Sherpa service, which shuttled our gear from one hotel to the next every time. So in the morning, we would just leave our gear and we'd find it at the next hotel. And not a thought of COVID. There's just no COVID up in the mountains. Wonderful social fun. I mean, everybody was in a great mood. Half of the people on the trail were Americans. We just had an amazing time. I loved it. And it's the first time I've ever pushed my body like that. Brian, I don't know how often you do 6 days in a row of a 10-mile hike. I've never done that. And I didn't know if I could do it. And I felt so great after it.
I want to stop on one thing you mentioned earlier. You said you took a tour. I wonder if you had a guide for the tour and what, It must be pretty intimidating to have Rick Steves as a client.
You know, for 25 years, I would lead my tours. And for the last 10 or 15 years, I've generally been taking my tours. Mm-hmm. And I thumb through our catalog. And every year I just kind of go, I feel like going to this tour. And the guides all feel like, oh no, Rick's going to be on my tour. But there's no reason to worry about that. I'm having a great time. And in fact, I prefer going with my guides because they specialize in each country. And I just want to be in their company and learn from them and be inspired by them. They're just really great. But this was a tour in the sense that they've organized the reservations for you and they've got the dinners booked and they've got the Sherpa service, but we were the only people on our tour. I mean, it's atomized that way. So I was a little bit stressed out by making the reservations up in the mountains because it's very popular. And I just decided I'm going to pay a few hundred extra bucks and let somebody who knows how to do it for me. And then they give you the maps and the apps and all that kind of stuff. But it was just, it's a beautiful thing. And there's these kind of companies that do these sort of walking tours. But it's, you had the option of having a guide. And I was a little bit envious of the groups that did have a guide because they know all of the nature and history and culture and wildlife. And they're teaching you all the way along. And I'm kind of a wonk that way. I love to have a local guide. But in that case, I'm glad we just had our own.
So your trips encompass both of these kinds of places, right? High mountain passes, places you can only get to on foot, and no large masses of cruise ship day trippers there. But you also have big cities and sites, and I understand you have a series coming up focusing on the art of Europe. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you for asking, Brian. And, you know, for 30 years, since 1990, I've had shows airing on WILL. It's only a third of how long WILL has been around, but I'm part of the family. And every 2 years, like clockwork, since 1990, we've come out with a new series, a new season. And something I've wanted to do for decades is to do an art show because we cover so much art, but it's the travel show and we can't really get into the art. So finally, we've done enough great travels. We have a huge archive. I decided we're going to weave this together into a 6-hour art series, 6 1-hour shows. I'm so excited about it. It's a huge 2-year project. It's a 90-page script from the pyramids to Picasso. And we're well into it now. And 80% of it is stuff that we've shot before that we're weaving together. But 20% of it, which is a lot, is on cameras and glue and B-roll over there in Europe. And I need to go there with my crew to lace this all together. Oh, it's complicated when you have a big camera and you want to get into those museums. You got all the bureaucracy. You got to get sorted out. Imagine you can know what that's like, Brian. And you got to get that all figured out because you want to have free run of that great museum. It cost, I think, $1,000 an hour to be alone in the Uffizi Gallery. But, you know, if you're a big shot or if you're a TV crew that needs to be there, that's why they close on Monday. Tourists are frustrated by Monday because you can't go to the Uffizi. Well, it's busy on Monday with film crews and fancy people with their entourage.
So I have some questions. I want to dig a little bit into the Rick Steves origin story, asking you, what is your first memory of travel?
When I was a little kid, it was camping and boating here in the Puget Sound, Seattle area. You know, my dad, every Friday, he'd meet me at school, my mom and dad, and we'd head off. If it was sunny, we'd go boating in the San Juans. If it was rainy, we'd go east to the mountains. But then my dad, who was a piano teacher, started to import pianos from Germany. So one day I remember I came home from school. My dad said, son, we're going to Europe to see the piano factories. Whoa, I thought that's a stupid idea. I got over there, it was great. And my first memories in Europe, we went up to Norway to see the relatives. I was on the carpet in front of the TV watching Neil Armstrong walk on the moon in 1969. And I got to hear the moon landing broadcast in Norwegian with my Norwegian cousins. And even as just a little 14-year-old kid, I remember thinking, you know, back home, all of my friends are waving American flags going, yay, America, we did it. But the whole world was watching. And I was watching from Norway. And it occurred, and I heard it in Norwegian. I mean, en lite skritte for mennesketeren and a giant leap for mankind, you know? And it occurred to me that the whole world is celebrating. And I was so thankful for that, just that reminder that this world's a beautiful place and the United States, we're 4% of it. And one thing I've learned ever since then is the world is filled with joy. It's filled with love. It's filled with beautiful families, wonderful people. And if you don't know that, you haven't traveled enough or you haven't traveled well. Because I've spent 100 days a year living overseas and you learn a lot about your home by leaving it and looking at it from a distance. And you also get comfortable with the rest of the world and you celebrate the diversity in it instead of being afraid of it. And, you know, I'm always happy to go home and I'm more thankful to be living where I am as an American than ever after a trip. But I'm sure thankful for how travel can make me friendly with the world.
Last week, my New Yorker page a day calendar had this cartoon by Barbara Smaller. It was of a couple packing for a trip, right? And the woman says to the man, before you pack that, I want you to think, is it good or bad for America's prestige abroad? It got me thinking about something that the New York Times Magazine said in a profile of you back in 2019. I'm going to read here. Rick Steves seems miraculously untouched by the need to look cool, which of course makes him sneakily cool. I guess that's a compliment, but
I'll take it as a compliment. Yeah.
I do think there's a deeper idea there though, that you are often trying to get at with people, which is, you know, how can people overcome that need to look cool or maybe feel in control when it might be keeping them from traveling to places where they don't speak the language or they don't have an intuitive grasp of the customs?
Yeah. You know, I'm doing my best to inspire people just to travel like backpackers. I don't care what age you are. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, you know? I've learned that from my travelers as a tour guide. Mm-hmm. It's funny you brought this up, but I mean, this is just a mock-up that I used for filming our upcoming membership special. But this is a journal from my 1978 trip from Istanbul to Kathmandu. And I was just a ragamuffin and it was the greatest trip of my life. But when I look at that, that was my coming of age trip. And the big question is, can you do that today? And the answer is yes, you can do it today. You know, if you are eager and curious and open-minded, you could do that traveling anywhere. You can have that trip that opens you up. And I just love that notion. And it's very important to me to be candid, to be honest, to be informal. My business, my first book was called Europe Through the Back Door. And the whole idea is catching Europe by surprise, sneaking in through the back door where you're just a friend. I like to travel where I'm not part of the economy, but just part of the party. And I do that today as an older traveler. And I did that when I was a backpacker as well.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guest. Rick Steves is the host of Public Radio's Travel with Rick Steves. And on public television, he's the host of Rick Steves Europe. I spoke with Steves last week as part of a member event celebrating the 100th anniversary of Illinois Public Media, the NPR station that produces the 21st. When we return from the break, we'll have more with Rick Steves, including some practical tips for traveling in the pandemic, where in Europe to go with children, and more. This is the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my conversation with Rick Steves, the public media travel guru. This was taped last week at an online member event for our home station, Illinois Public Media. We've got about 15 minutes left in our scheduled conversation, and so many questions have come in from our members tonight. I'm going to try and get through a few of them here. Joe from Bloomington says, I'm impressed with how you've turned your passion into a successful business. How have you been able to sustain your business the past 2 years? You have 100 employees, you said. Yeah. How were they affected?
Well, I'm really blessed to be able to find my niche and do something that just gives me energy. I'm working harder now during the pandemic than I've ever worked. I'm just having so much fun because I'm teaching. I have a mission. My mission is to inspire Americans to venture beyond Orlando. And thankfully I measure my profit, not in dollars left in the bank at the end of the year, because if I did that, I'd be pretty depressed right now. But I measure my profit by how many people's perspectives have I helped broaden and open up. It's the most beautiful thing to come home with that most beautiful souvenir. And that's a broader, a global perspective. As an employer, it's been very difficult. I have 100 people on my payroll and we've had no revenue since COVID hit, zero. And I've been committed to keeping my staff employed. So we're doing whatever we can to produce things, but frankly, it's tough to keep 100 people busy when there's no tours to do. Now we're gonna kick back into gear, so I think we're gonna come out of the woods. But you know, I've had something called the Rick Steves Volunteer Corps. And I told my staff, hey guys, I'm paying you whether we have any work or not. Why don't we have a volunteer corps where you can all help out in the local food bank and clean up the parks and help out at the senior center and staff the thrift store. And it's been a wonderful thing for my travelers to have the dignity, I think, of producing something for the pay they're getting and contributing to our community. You know, I'm lucky I have a business that thrives and I have a business that gives me a lot of energy. And I just think it's ethical for me to remember I've had 30 good years and I can stand by my employees for a couple of bad years. And God willing, we'll be touring again here starting next month. And if everybody can just get their vaccinations and stay healthy and look out for their neighbors, we'll be able to travel again and we'll get back in the saddle.
You mentioned in there the idea of the fragility of our environment. We had a couple of questions about that. David from Champaign asked, a major consideration in travel to Europe is the increasing need to reduce our carbon footprint. What are your thoughts and plans for adjusting travel practices? And related to that, we also had Peggy and Todd in Urbana who said, given the serious concern about global warming, can you speak to the impacts of various forms of travel on carbon emissions?
Well, Brian, anybody who's in tourism is contributing mightily to global warming, assuming you believe in global warming. And I take 30,000 people a year up on a good year on tours, and I make too much money because nobody taxes me for the carbon that we produce. So I just decided it's only ethical for me to be carbon neutral. And I believe in mitigation. You can be flight shamed out of your travels and then everybody just stays home and watches my TV shows. But I think that's not a good solution. I think travel is really important, but we have to travel ethically. That means we have to pare away from a carbon point of view. So what I've done as a businessman is to give myself what I call a self-imposed carbon tax. And when you study this, it's pretty well accepted that if you smartly invest $30 into something that mitigates the carbon problem, that will be as much good as the bad you create as an individual flying from here to Europe and back. So what I do is I took 30,000 people in 2019, made a lot of money. I should have paid for their carbon. So I multiplied 30,000 times 30, that's $900,000. I rounded it up to a million. And then I said, I should pay $1 million to fight climate change. And rather than just get carbon offsets, which is the uncreative, developed world, first world kind of default, I decided I want to support farmers in the developing world in climate smart agriculture. And if you invest smartly, $30, helping family farms in the developing world, half of humanity, half of the people on this planet are smallholder farms in the developing world, struggling to earn enough produce enough food to feed their families and have leftover to sell in the market. And they are contributing a lot to climate change just because they're scrambling to make ends meet. And with a little bit of help, they can do a much, much smarter and more efficient and more environmentally friendly work. And that's what we do. So people who take our tours now fly with the comfort of knowing they are flying carbon neutral. One of the last shows we produced before COVID was a special I made called Hunger and Hope. And this talks about what is the plight of farmers in the developing world. And what is the root cause of extreme poverty? When you think of 10% of the world living in extreme poverty, $2 a day, and you think of what Climate Smart is doing to these people who are struggling already, there are so many solutions. And I learned so much when I was scouting and writing this show, and then also so much when we went out and shot it. But people can watch this show. It's available streaming anywhere in public television. And this is a book, a 100-page book that I wrote as a gift for the pledge version of it. But anybody can get this book for free on my website. It's a PDF, they can download it. And it just shares all the amazing things I learned by doing that. But the more you know about this, the more exciting it is to be involved in it. Some people don't want that. It complicates their life. Thomas Jefferson said, travel makes a person wiser, if less happy. And I think that's very thought-provoking. Muhammad said, don't tell me how educated you are, tell me how much you've traveled. I just say, travel is a huge, wonderful opportunity to get to know the world. And there's a lot of fear in our society these days, as I mentioned in that video clip. And to me, the flip side of fear is understanding. If you're a fearful person, you could be exposed to what you're afraid of, I think. And I'm less fearful in a lot of ways, not because I'm a courageous person, but because I've been able to get out there and get to know things that are supposed to be fearful. And there's a lot of goodness in this planet. And the flip side of fear is understanding. And we gain that understanding when we travel.
Some practical questions here. Okay. We got a couple on traveling with children. Jordan from Champaign asks, any advice on visiting a European country with small children, 5 to 7 years old? Should we stick to an English-speaking country?
People ask me whose kids are 1 or 3, where should we go? And I say, grandma and grandpa's on the way to the airport. And just have an adult vacation in Europe, even a shorter one, and then come home and have your family time. But if you can afford to take the kids to Europe, even if they're 1 and 3, and if you don't mind it, you take a hit on what an adult couple of mom and dad would experience. So it's more expensive and you experience less, but it's great parenting and it's just beautiful family time. So we did it every year for the first 20 years of our kids, took them to Europe from prenatal to graduation from high school, and don't regret it a bit. So yeah, if you can swing it, I think it's very good parenting. It doesn't matter if you speak the language or not. Young people, well-educated people, and people in tourism speak English. It's the linguistic common denominator. So don't go to Norway. Don't skip Norway because you don't speak Norwegian. If a Norwegian meets a Greek, they speak English together. What Greek speaks Norwegian? It's the international linguistic common denominator. So go where you want to go. And kids are a great advantage because people love kids. And I thought it was great.
Hakan from Normal asks, what's the most remote or out of the way place you've ever been to in the world? And how did you choose that place?
Probably Papua New Guinea. And I went to Papua New Guinea with my church. I used to make videos for my Lutheran church. Because that's the way I could contribute with what I do. And we went there and did a show about the philosophy of modern missionaries and not, you know, bras and Bibles, but really helping communities and connecting wisdom from the Southern Hemisphere together and learning from each other. And it was a beautiful opportunity, but we were in Papua New Guinea and that was really, really remote. That was a long time ago, but that was an amazing experience.
Perhaps a related question, perhaps not, we'll find out. Jerry from Urbana asks, if you had a top one or two countries that you would like to live in as an expat, what would those be?
If I was going to live somewhere else, the language barrier would be an issue if you're going to live somewhere. It's not an issue if you're traveling around. I speak only English, nothing to brag about, but it's the language that works. For my TV production, my guidebooks, my tour guiding, English is fine. But if I was going to live somewhere, that would be a concern. I would not want to live anywhere outside of the United States. I'd want to travel sort of indefinitely. That's what I do. When I go to, I spend 100 days a year in Europe and, you know, I'm going to be going to 10 cities, four nights each over a month and a half. And I'll be four nights in Florence, Munich, Salzburg, Vienna, Brussels, Amsterdam, Paris, Athens. I mean, it's going to be great. And then after four nights, I'll be ready to go to another city. So that's kind of my style. I guess I wouldn't want to live outside of the United States.
Barbara from Crete is asking if you have any plans to expand your tours into the rest of the Baltics. And I guess I should say full disclosure, we share a Lithuanian heritage, Barbara and I. So I wonder, there's a family interest in that, I know.
You know, I love the Baltics, and I particularly like Estonia because it's very accessible to Finland. And you can just take the fast boat across just for an afternoon. But as a businessman, I have to consider the market. And if you wrote a guidebook to Lithuania, it would sell in the hundreds. And you cannot write a guidebook that sells in the hundreds and survive. So I have to factor in where are people going. And the Baltics are just not going to be a big seller. I've covered Tallinn very well. And it's part of my Scandinavia book. But I'm a little bit hardcore when it comes to being strict about not writing books about places where the guidebook will not sell.
Vilnius, I'm afraid, is no Venice, right? Is that
Vilnius? Vilnius is the least of the Baltic capitals, from not a qualitative thing, but just from a sales potential thing. As Tallinn is a big hit, Riga, and then little Vilnius. The trick is, how do you get Americans to go to an off the beat place that's not that off the beat where they're willing to do it? My sort of mission is to help the most people travel. For instance, I wrote two huge books on cruising, covering all the ports of the Mediterranean and all the ports of Northern Europe. I'm not a cruiser. I don't think it's a great kind of travel, but it's not a bad kind of travel. It's just an option. And a lot of good people take cruises and there's no good guidebook to help them know what to do on the shore. So we made the best-selling books now on cruising the Mediterranean and in Northern Europe because that's a market, you know. So, Brian, if you can share with me a market, that'd be great. If I didn't care about markets, I'd write a guidebook to Iran. I'd write a guidebook to Palestine. I'd write a guidebook to Ukraine. But I'm not a photojournalist. I'm not an adventurer in that sense. I'm a guidebook writer, and my publisher wants to sell books, and we want to take tours around. So there's just that reality. My crusade right now is not to go to Vilnius, but to help people not just go where everybody's going who wants the Instagram shot. You know, all over Europe now, you see places that have a freakish crowd. What are all those people doing there? Nobody went there until a year ago. Oh, that's where all the Instagram people go. They don't even know the name of the place, but they know they got to stand right there and get a shot of them with that mountain in the background. And you see that now, and the local people just laugh at it. And as a tour organizer and a travel teacher, I just look at it and my jaw drops.
We're coming to the end of our time. There are still going to be a lot of people out there who are nervous. This is where we began with traveling in a pandemic. Obviously, if you're immunocompromised, if you have young children who can't be vaccinated in the household, there are a lot of reasons not to go. But
for sure, Brian, I'm not advocating traveling during the pandemic. I did, not as a representative of my company, but just because I wanted to go on vacation and I needed a break and I wanted to take the risk and see what it was like. And I learned what it was like. If you're comfortable doing something in the United States on the road away from home, you should be just as comfortable going to Europe. I think Europe is every bit as safe as the United States from a COVID point of view. And I don't think the flight across the Atlantic is any big risk that should be a deal killer. You know, that's just my take on that. But what I would say is if you can't relax and enjoy it, don't do it. I do not like to go out to a restaurant if I can't get good ventilation and feel comfortable dining with my friends. I would just rather not bother. And it's the same with travel. And I would remind people, it's going to be okay. Put it off for a year, 2023. I think COVID's going to be old news. But if you want to travel now, thousands of people are doing it. Half of the people hiking around Mount Blanc were Americans. Most of my staff has gone to Europe. Many of them are in Europe right now. I'm going to be flying over in March and expect to have a great time with my crew. Every year we give our guides an off-season tour of Turkey just so they can have the experience of being tour members instead of guides. It's a great experience for them. And we subsidize that trip. And our guides just got back from their winter tour of Turkey and they had a wonderful tour, 20 of them on a bus. People are doing it. But again, you risk, if you get a positive test, of being prisoner in a hotel for a week. And that's a big deal. I wouldn't want that. And you got to take that risk knowingly. I mean, I've thought a lot about it. I've written a lot about it. And I've, for the last 2 years, employed a traveler's mindset right here at home. And it's been a real cool time. You know, travelers are curious. Travelers get out of their comfort zone. Travelers try something new. Travelers dust off old passions. I've been doing that here because I couldn't travel. And it's been a great way to give my life a little extra dimension, do some things I wouldn't normally do, knowing I will be traveling again when it is safe enough for me to be comfortable doing it. But you know, for me, we got business to do. We got to whoop this pandemic. And from my point of view, it's just a matter of we got to get our vaccinations. This is really something that I feel very strongly about, is if we could all get our vaccinations, if we could all respect each other and wear our masks, the virus would be very unhappy. And I want to make that virus unhappy as soon and as thoroughly as possible. And once that happens, I think we'll be traveling again sooner.
I want to thank everybody who tuned in this evening for being with us, for supporting WILL Illinois Public Media. And Rick Steves, thank you so much to you as well for spending this evening with us and bringing a little warmth into a very, very cold central Illinois night.
Brian, it's been a delight. Thank you for having me. And thanks to all of you for supporting public broadcasting.
Rick Steves is the host of Travel with Rick Steves on Public Radio and Rick Steves Europe on PBS. He's also the author of many guidebooks, including 2020's For the Love of Europe, My Favorite Places, People, and Stories. I spoke with him last week at a virtual member event for our home station, WILL Illinois Public Media. And that's all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.